This is Bad Movies We Love, part of the Scheiss Podcast Network.
If you're listening to this, you are the Resistance.
Hello, bad movie lovers, and welcome to a very special spotlight session here on Bad Movies We Love, where we don't just talk about the movies, we talk to the people who make them. I've really enjoyed doing this interview series, and I've been very fortunate to talk to a lot of interesting people. And in this Filmmaker in Focus episode, I was joined by writer, director, producer, actor, who you may know from things like The Time Traveler's Wife on HBO. He's also the voice of Sunspot on the hit animated series X-Men 97. Guy Agostini is in the house to talk about his career behind the camera, in front of the camera, and to give us a little bit of a preview of what's in store on the new season of X-Men. So take a load off and enjoy the interview.
This might be my first time in the U.S. Doing an interview like with an actual, you know, mic and stuff. I did one in my friend in Brazil, not for my hometown, but for a different town that has one. And I did one with him when I went to CCXP, the Comic-Con in Brazil in 2024. And so he interviewed me beginning of last year. And it was a nice setup like this too. But, you know, I see it all the time. People do it. I just, you know, I've never done it. So it's cool.
Yeah. Most of the time I work just out of my home office. And I was like, I could technically set this up in the home office, but I'm like, I don't want to have to clean my house either. And I don't have like an actual room office anymore like I used to. So I'm a little bit more like,
okay.
Hey, when the occasion calls for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right, man.
Okay.
The man, the myth, the legend, Guy Agostini in the flesh, in studio. Thanks for being here, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been a long time coming, huh?
It has been. Yeah. I mean, well, technically we did a podcast already like 2 years ago, so.
Yeah, but like.
Yeah, but it's been a long time coming to actually like sit down and talk with you about your work as a director. And we'll talk a little bit about your acting as well. And because this is going to be a June-centric episode, talk about X-Men,
yeah,
of course, it's coming back.
And I'm representing again.
Yes, exactly. I would be remiss in my duties if I didn't at least talk to you a little bit about X-Men. But I got to watch, I want to say like a dozen of your movies, something like that, maybe 15. There was a couple that automatically played after the ones that I pushed play on that you didn't send me, so I watched those as well.
Jesus.
So
a lot
I feel
of bad
like
stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah, I feel like I got a good education in your work. The first one I jumped in on, though, was Coming to Terms.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was just happenstance, or I don't know if you believe that like the universe just sort of moves in certain ways, but I've oddly been more aware of my own mortality lately. And so when I came across that film, and that was the first one that I watched, I'm like, what are the odds that that is going to be the case? So why don't you just tell me a little bit about sort of the inspiration for that film and how you got started there?
That is so fascinating, Nick, because literally, I think it was the end of last year, but I became friends with this incredible producer who's had, for the last, I think, 7 years, his shorts at Holly Shorts here in LA that we know is a really big festival for short films, is Oscar qualifying. And I sent him like three of my like best shorts and stuff. And he gave me so much praise about Coming to Terms. Mm-hmm. And usually, because I feel like the quality of the filmmaking is a little bit below of a couple other ones, I just, you know, I never like send that as my main thing. It's very, I'll talk about, you know, like what you asked me about the story and all of that. But I just wanted to say, because I then reached out to my friend who wrote the script, Joseph Menzel, who acts with me in the short. And I was like, man, this is so special, right? We both remember being so special. And then I shared with a couple of other friends, and they were also moved by it. And so there it is, you telling me again a few months later. And I was like, I gotta share some clips of it on social, and I haven't yet. So now it's another reminder to do that. But yeah, that short film started because we were, and we were all part of this acting studio in New York City called AMAW by Anthony Mindel. And Joseph and I wanted to do something together, and they finally did this film festival for the school, for the studio, and we jumped right in. One of the actresses in this short was my ex, and so we were doing a lot of, you probably saw her in a lot of my stuff because we did a lot of stuff together. My very first short film was with her before I moved to New York. So that was kind of like, you know, how it was born in terms of like, let's create something together. But then the story came about that I was like, my brother passed away now 16 years ago. Sorry. Thank you. And I, for the first time, wanted to like, touch upon, you know, that situation. And I told him like when my brother, he passed of cancer, and I had been in the US for a year. I'd just moved to Miami. When I found out and stuff, I planned to go back to Brazil as a surprise when I showed up at my house, and my parents knew. And so my brother didn't know. And so I dressed up as like a little bit like a hat of a military shirt and stuff, kind of like, hey, I'm here to fight with you. Right. And we have the photo, you know, when I showed up at his door and he, you know, opened the door and all of that, it was so emotional. So I had that image and the circumstance. And I told Joseph, I was like, you know, what if like, you create your magic, like you are a great writer, you have great ideas. I just think about like this particular situation of like somebody coming, wanting to like, you know, be with somebody that they love and, you know, family member to like be together and fight through this very difficult time. And I said to him, but it doesn't have to be brothers. It doesn't have to be, I actually would prefer if it's not like, feel like so autobiographical.
Too close.
Yeah, a little too close. So what he did, if you remember, he used, obviously not the exact situation, but he did that with the girls.
Yes.
With the sister. Yeah, so yeah. Turn them into sisters, and then she comes in with a Powerpuff Girl.
Yes.
Right? So that's the reason, you know, that's where it came from. And then he just created this amazing story of like these two best friends. And then my character is the one that's dying of cancer. And then at the end, there are stories that are completely separate. They interchange, right? Which I love those stories. I mean, that was such a wonderful idea. He did it masterfully. And that short got us into the film corner at Cannes, the Cannes Film Corner.
Oh, nice.
Which is, it's part of Cannes. It's just not a competition thing. But it's not easy to get in. I submitted my other two shorts. The one that I'm submitting now, as you know, West Texas Home, which I think is one of my best work in all levels. And I just submitted, and I was so upset because it didn't get in. And so, you know, like, you just never know what they're looking for. And they accept a lot of people because, again, it's not competition. But anyway, so that was how I was able to go to Cannes, because it got accepted into Film Corner. And I was there, and we also screened at a couple other, you know, not super big festivals, but the Manhattan Film Festival, it's very prestigious. And so it was very special to me. It was very nice.
Well, that was fairly early on, too. I mean, if I'm reading correctly what I wrote down, that was the third feature or the third short that you had directed. And you co-directed that with
Joseph. Yeah, I co-directed Joseph, with him. Yes, right? Yes. I don't know if it was the third, but yeah, I mean, I don't know.
It was 2018.
Yeah. I think I had done other ones, but yeah.
But one of the key tenets that I've noticed in watching all this stuff is that there is a really strong through line in terms of relationships, not just relationships in the sense of like romantic relationships, but sort of like the stress that relationships are under, I think, in life. Mm-hmm. And look, maintaining relationships is a difficult thing. I think especially as we get older and we have jobs and people start to have kids and stuff, it becomes a lot more difficult to maintain those things. Mm-hmm. But what about sort of relationship dynamics between friends, between lovers in some cases? What about that interests you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I never like so specifically decided I you know, I want to talk about these things or focus on relationship in specific. I just think that the stories that I care about or that I love watching, though, you know, I used to be a very like action guy, you know, through my dad. I still love action movies. I love war movies. Like
I still love them.
Yeah, I love them. But I can't create them as of now just yet, right? So when you're starting, it's just easier to create anything that is like in one location. It's relationship based. And also as an actor, you know, when you start studying, when you start training, that's where you're tackling. You're tackling, you know, relationship based scenes and scene study. And so you can, you know, train your apparatus to like go through all these different emotions. So I think that's where it's so interesting to say that. I never thought of it, but I think that's where it comes from. Also in training, you know, there's so many different methodologies of acting, but I think one thing that all of them will stress, maybe not as number one, but I think as number one as it should be, is relationship. So when you get a script, when you're acting, your partner is the most important thing in that scene. You're your co-stars, right? So and when you're going through a scene, what is the relationship when we're auditioning? Like you have to have these clear, you have to be so clear and specific about what the relationship is. So in training, that comes out a lot. That comes up a lot. So I feel like that's the reason why, you know, in all my work, it's driven by relationship, because it's how I've been trained and what I also like care about and trying to, you know, to learn and also to experience and to express, you know, through my own life and obviously these stories and these characters.
Yeah, I actually was listening back to our other interview today when I was at the gym, because I was like, I don't want to like retread a bunch of territory that we've already covered. I'll just tell people to listen to X-Friends where he is on and you can hear that side of the story. But one of the things that you mentioned at the time was the value, or like what you love about acting, is being present in the moment. And so in watching these different characters that you played, and you directing yourself in a bunch of them as well.
Yeah.
How do you sort of step back enough to also to sit in the director's chair, to then tell yourself what to go and do out there and be responsible for everything, but then also sort of compartmentalize and be responsible for your part as the actor?
That's an amazing question, Nick. I love that, because it's true. It's a little contradictory as I'm thinking about it now, right? I said, like, I love being in the moment. It's true, because I mean, acting training is first and foremost about that, right? Being present. And also, since, you know, technology and the phone really has taken over our lives, I remember like early on when I had like iPhone and I was getting in the beginning of my training in Miami, I mean, we're all addicted to it, but I was just telling you a little bit earlier on, right, that I've like been so much less on social media. I'm less addicted to the phone and stuff, but I remember I was so obsessed with it. And it's fine. It's all a process. But, you know, the more I mature and the more I get ears behind my shoulders and everything else, I care more about, like, you know, being present and you know, savoring each moment. That many times I still don't, because, you know, it's part of life to, or the life that I have right now is to be on social media, to do a lot of stuff and things like that. But I care a lot about that. And, you know, I love the book by Eckhart Tolle, you know, The Power of Now. One of my favorite movies, when people ask me, is called The Peaceful Warrior by Dan Millman. Hmm. And Dan Millman is a great author. It's a book first called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And that movie, it's literally the power of now, but through the lens of an athlete. And also he uses the one of the characters' names is Socrates, almost as like the legendary, like, yeah, philosopher. Yeah. Socrates, right? That like it gives all these amazing life lessons and stuff. But I do also feel I have this capacity. People ask me, it's so hard about, you know, directing and acting. It is, but I don't know if, because the first time I did it, I I had a, you know, obviously a great team. You have to get a great team behind you, but maybe because I'm also so like hyperactive and I'm such an overthinker, as an actor, my whole, like, the biggest part of my training was to like not overthink, not to be so much in my head, to be present, to like listen. And so when I had so many other things going on, I don't focus so, obviously I prepare, I always prepare, you know, I'm an athlete, so I'm all about preparation, but then I love that chaos that that is going around me. And then when I don't have time to overthink too much, I do all my preparation. As you hear all the great, great actors, which I'm always striving to get really close to, they all say, you prepare, you do everything you need to do. And then when you're there, you let it all go. And that's how I feel when I'm directing, because like you said, we are, when you're a director, you are the captain of that ship, and every plot problem, everything that's going on, you are responsible for. And so, you know, there's so much going on, and the moment it's on, oh, it's amazing. Cause then it's like, it's just like, I just feel that, you know, and yes, it can be tricky. You know, you call cut on yourself sometimes or whatever. That's, you know, I learned through the years of like having people that you trust behind that camera as well. So then it's not weird for the other actor and stuff like that. So, but I personally believe that my acting gets better when I'm doing both.
That's interesting. I mean, you are sort of tackling one problem from two different angles, both as, you know, behind the camera, needing to block, frame what you want to see, what you want to see out of yourself.
Yeah.
So you kind of get a chance to be like self-critical. And then what you said about preparation, I mean, it's not too dissimilar from athletic training, right? The idea is that you train and you train and you train. So that way, when you're in the pressure moment, you don't think about the thing that you need to do. You just do the thing
True.
That you need to do. You make it reflex, right?
True. Muscle memory, yeah.
Yeah. But you mentioned influences. And so we had a fork in the road here where I was going to go one way. But since you brought it up, I do want to know, like, cinematically, you mentioned action movies, but do you have like big inspirations that when you're either directing or when you're writing something or when you're going to be in front of the camera, like, are there inspirations that you pull from?
You mean like to tackle a particular role or when I'm directing about like the project or?
Well, like growing up, you know, you watch a lot of movies, obviously sort of, if we cut our teeth on action movies, we're going to have sort of a natural like inclination to like action. But are there certain filmmakers who stylistically influence the choices that you like to make when you're directing?
Yes, but they have changed. They have, like, because in my teens and all of that, in my early stages, I was full on an athlete. Acting had nothing to do with my life, so I just enjoyed it as a viewer. And like I said, with the I didn't know anything about directors. Obviously, a couple of the big ones, you know, Spielberg and all that, James Cameron.
Can't help but hear about them.
But I was not like a cinephile. I didn't know about the specifics, and it was all through my dad. And then when I started, you know, in my early 20s to get into acting, obviously things like another movie, when people ask me about my favorite movie in the larger scale, I always say Titanic, and a lot of people laugh and it's fine, but I still believe it. I mean, it's such an incredible movie, and I, the experience that I had watching it, right, and I watched it so many times, it'll never get out of my body. And that's what it's so powerful about art, right, is how it makes us feel. And so from that moment on, I like, one thing that I, for me, is it's become a big inspiration, and directors like those big ones is those that tell real life stories. That's become my number one passion, which we can eventually maybe talk a little bit about, like the one that I was telling you a little bit earlier too, with like Roses Are Blind, which is based on a true story. I'm now developing, you know, something that is closer to me, that's based on a true story as well. It's not necessarily a biopic, but I am obsessed with biopics. So like, you know, the big ones, you know, Christopher Nolan doing the, you know, not just that, but the amazing stuff that he does, Spielberg too, you know. I mean, you know, the big, like Scorsese, I'm not the biggest fan of Scorsese. I love some of his movies, but like not as much as Nolan or Spielberg. And then, like, more on the indie side, I actually, you know, sometimes I want to have more knowledge about, like, some of the, like, the indie people. Obviously, Sean Baker, but, you know, just came out. I love Denora, but I don't know their, like, full body of work, and I feel bad about it.
But there's a lot of movies. There's a lot of movies. There's so many movies.
There's a lot of great directors. Like, for instance, like, a movie that I am obsessed with as well is Seabiscuit.
Okay.
And at one point, I was, through my ex, developing a story based on the first female jockey to ever win a race in the United States. And I watched that movie. I loved that movie. And then I was like, oh my God, that director is amazing, you know? And I started, like, research more about his work and whatever. And so, you know, stuff like that, when something, like, really sticks out, I like, oh, I pay more attention, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look, Titanic is not a bad choice as your favorite movie. Kristen would be very happy.
Oh,
to
good.
Hear that. When it was out on its, I think, 25th anniversary re-release a couple of years ago, we went and saw it in IMAX, and it was awesome. Still, I was like, this is such a good movie.
It's a good movie.
You know, it is. It's just super well made and entertaining, and it does kind of, like, what you want movies to do, especially when you go to the theaters for that kind of stuff. So, you know,
good.
I understand. Good. So, as I watched Roses Are Blind and then continued my progress to the point where we get to You Are Funny, I think both of these movies touch on this thing about, like, expectations, both sort of externally and internally, sort of pressure, societal norms, and how that governs our lives and sort of our self-image. So I think it's something that a lot of people deal with. So I'm curious how you deal about it and why you chose to bring that to screen.
For sure. I mean, the social pressure, it's a real thing. It was not a conscientious choice to, like, tackle those two stories because of in, like, the similarity. They're very different, obviously, stories, right? In the vein that you're finding a similarity, it just happened. You know, Roses came first 7, 6, 7, 8 years ago, and that's based on a true story. And it was also through my ex and this woman who I had met her previously years ago in Miami, and so as I started to move to New York and I was doing my things and had graduated, she was like, oh, I have this story, my true story. And she wrote many different play versions, film script versions. And she's like, I would love for you to direct and Christina to play the lead of the film. And I was like, well, I've never done a feature film. I don't know how to do a feature film. And so I said, well, let me read it. And I was reading a few of the versions. And though she's not, you know, necessarily a film writer.
Yeah.
I'm like, this needs a lot of work, but the story was fascinating. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is real, really, you know, so then like it bursted that fire that I have about true stories. And I said to her, listen, you know, what I can do, and I had done, I don't know, a handful of short films at that time. I was like, I can do a short film and we can do it as a proof of concept and blah, blah, blah. And so she was so into it. And then I started to work with her in the structure. I also had studied a lot film script structure. I'm not a writer. I have written a few things, but I always say I don't consider myself a writer. I partner up, I collab with writers because dialogue is really difficult to write. And creating stories, ideas, it's to me so hard. But I studied a lot, you know, the process of it and the structure and all of that. And so I think I excel in that part, which I think is the easiest part, because when you have something written, it's always easier to, like, you know, come get feedback or give feedback and stuff. But that is my forte. And so I was like, let's create, I can help you restructure this for a short film. And then we can rewrite some things together. And then I had a great friend of mine who's a great actor, but also a great writer, who, like, came in and, like, rewrote a lot of stuff. And that's how we got to that script. And then we shot it. And I had, you know, incredible actors who were former teachers of mine in New York. And it was an incredible experience. And, you know, up to this you know, to this point, is still, I'm very proud, obviously, of that short. Now, you know, things have gone a little south, and it's unfortunate. But that's how that came about, and it was always with the intention of creating the feature film, which I now have been bought out of after 8 years, and in a very, very disrespectful and very shitty way of how it all came about. So that's what I just wanted to point it out, because it just really happened. We literally just finalized the agreement and all of that. And, you know, it was very hurtful, you know, how it all came about, because I not only love that story, I put in so much time, so much energy to then just, like, you know, for that to happen the way it happened, especially with the woman who I've, like, spent 7 years pouring so much energy into, it was devastating. But that's just to show you, it's like, you know, it's life, it's business. People were always, you know, do things that we're not expecting sometimes, unfortunately, in a not very nice way. But I'm happy that I'm actually out and made, you know, made the best happen to them and to the movie, you know. But so that's how, like, that story, you know, I had nothing to do with, like, oh, let's create this kind of, like, story. It just came to me, right? And then You Are Funny was written by Ashley Felina Rose, who is a friend that I worked with during the HBO, The Time Traveler's Wife, that I was a part of in New York. And she was like, oh, you know, I've been away from acting, but, you know, she's a musical theater person. She's been acting for her whole life, but she had taken a big break, and we became good friends. And she's like, I have this script. Like, do you want to take a, you know, a read? I was like, yeah. And then I read it, and it was so funny. You know, she's very funny. And then we started tweaking things, you know, and working together. And I was like, oh, let's, I think we can do it. I would love to do it, be a part of it, and direct it, because the one thing that I've been trying to do since I created my very first short is that all the stuff that I'm going to pour time, energy into, I want to direct, because I'm passionate about directing and I want to get better. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So when I put in money, when I put in time, unless, like, people are asking me to act in it, that's totally fine. You know what I'm saying? But, like,
it's volunteers are always welcome.
If they have a good story, they have a good director, they're going to do something, please get me in. I'm down. But when we're developing something and I'm going to, you know, I want to do that, you know? So that's how that story came about too. She had already written it. We just, like, tweaked some things and rewrote a few parts, but that was all Ashley.
It is funny. And I think you're funny on screen. You have a good comedic presence. Oh, and you. Whether it was, I think, forgive me if I butcher the name, but I think it was The Unicorn Diaries.
I went to
the premiere there. Elsbeth, right? I think you have a good knack for comedy because you have a good, like, energy about you. And a lot of these characters, I mean, even I think Not This. Yeah. Is the one that I was watching, and I was like, this is ridiculous. I won't spoil it for people that haven't seen it.
You guys can watch it.
You deserve to laugh the way that you're supposed to laugh at that. But, yeah, you have a good knack for, I think, comedic presence on screen. So I'm curious, like, because you came up with action movies, like, were you the person that was, like, the funny guy in your friend group, or were you the athlete guy? So those are, like, two separate things.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. No, I was never the funny guy. I still don't consider, I mean, thank you. That means a lot to me. I don't consider myself, like, funny in that way. Like, I always say I'm definitely not a comedian and stuff like that. But that started to come about when I, in New York, started to do, you know, bigger short films and also, like, just little clips and scenes. They're like short films, but I try to, you know, differentiate them. I call them little, like, scenes that I just wanted to, like, practice and create material for myself.
Yeah.
I forget which one was the very first one, but I'm like, I want to do something comedic because I'm drawn to drama, big stories, big life stories, and that was my short film. My first short film was about that. So I was like, let me just dabble into, like, some comedic stuff. You know, in training, you know, there's always, like, comedic scenes that you do and stuff like that, a little bit of improv that I had, you know, had experience with. So I forget which one was my very first one, but I got like good feedback, and some of my friends, it was like, they were like, yeah, man, you're funny. Like, you have this thing. And I'm like, yeah, maybe I have this thing like that is not a comedian, but there's a timing. There's an understanding about comedy, I think, because I did watch a lot and studied, and I just like situational comedies, you know?
That makes sense.
So I think like I put myself in a lot of those, and then I started to create many of them where I was able to actually have a comedic reel, like a demo reel of all the stuff that I've created, and then I've gotten good feedback, and so I was like, well, maybe I do have a, you know, a little, I don't know if it's natural, it's definitely trained, but it's a combination of both that I can live in that world that is not like, again, you know, a comedian who's actually, you know, stirring the ship in a sitcom or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it too, I think, I don't want to like say necessarily dark comedy, but a little bit more like a little drier, a little satirical,
yes,
but still works pretty well. And I think sort of playing in that area of like the dialogue is going to be very intentionally loaded to be funny, but the performance is going to be a little bit more muted and toned down. It's not going to be like over the top, right? It's not slapstick. You're not performing
yes,
in that way. And so
I am drawn to that for sure.
So I think maybe because I know you a little bit, like seeing you sort of like deadpan some of these lines that you're doing, I'm like, I don't know. I find it very funny. So I mean,
yes,
I can understand the feedback from your friends there as well. I wanted to ask you a little bit about sort of shorts and features, because you mentioned this one film you're kind of developing as maybe like a proof of concept. We saw that, you know, you'd mentioned the feature rights getting bought. Do you look at your work doing directing, acting, producing, editing, all this stuff? You don't have to be a writer as well. You do plenty. But yes, go for writing if you want to.
I wish I was. I'm telling you, I have so much power for all the actors or creators who are writers. This is amazing. Yeah. I'm just, yeah.
So do you view the stuff that you're doing with short films as sort of like stepping stones to try to get to a feature, or, you know, just like sharpening your tools to be able to get to the point where you can either have the connections or like have the sort of fundamentals down to make a feature? Or do you sort of keep it in its own category? Because the last interview I did actually is with a guy, Robin DeVernon Writing. He's a Scottish filmmaker, but he also runs the Fulfillment Pictures short film festival in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just talking to him about sort of his recent short film that got finished, and now he's developing a feature, but his festival is very much focused on shorts and still sort of like maintaining the art of short films.
Mm.
So like, how do you balance like wanting to make a feature, but then also like sort of respecting the nature of a smaller story?
Of a smaller story, yeah. Well, I think it's a little bit of both, but now, like at this juncture of my life, it's definitely, if I, there is another short that I'm developing, that hopefully I get to do it, probably not this year, but maybe next year, but that I'm passionate about, and I'll do it. Like, I want to do it at the scale. I don't want, like, my thing is like, I always want to keep going up, right? Climbing up the ladder. So West Texas Home, like I said, I think, unfortunately, we haven't been getting positive, I guess not feedback, it's just positive response for the film festivals. But again,
gotcha.
I'm aiming like at the Oscar qualifying festivals and just like higher festivals that I had not done previously. But I wanted to be at that level and more, right? I always want to keep going up in terms of the, you know, quality of the production and, you know, and the people working in it, et cetera. But for me now, it is a stepping stone. I want to do my first feature. I want to direct my first feature. Obviously, I want to be in features as an actor, but I do want to have the experience of directing and acting in my first feature film. That's like a big goal for me, right? And it could be the story that I'm developing right now. Like I said, that's very close to me. I also understand filmmakers out there, like we all know, like when you're starting out, you know, you got to figure out how to make that feature, because most likely it's going to be very low budget. You're not going to get a lot of money. And so for those who like really want that story that is like so close to them to be so amazing, or maybe the story requires a, like a big budget, you should then probably write or find something else to do, yeah, because you need to get a, like something first, right? And so for me, and that like there's very dear to me, but it doesn't matter. I can do a very low budget. I just want to do it. And that's the only thing that I have right now that I can, that for me to direct, right? So I'm going to be focusing on that. But in the beginning, it was more to create content, to get experience. And then some of them, actually, the only one really, I think, Roses, that had the idea to do a feature film, right? But though I wanted at the time to also direct the feature film, I was also very aware that, hey, I want this to be like, because I believe in the story so much. If we get like great money, if we get like a great director, amazing. You know, I'm not attached to it in that way. But now I am more strategic. I want that short film, for instance, that I'm developing right now. I don't have an idea to make it a feature. That's its own standalone thing. But I want to start moving more into features. I want to be part of feature films, you know. And it's a big discussion I've had with other filmmaker friends of mine. You know, some say, hey, you know, it's a feature is easier to do something contained and super good quality, so you get noticed. A bunch of other people say, no, but you can't distribute shorts. I mean, you can, but not really.
Yeah,
and you
tough.
Know, and then you have a feature film you can sell. I mean, all these things is like you have both sides of the story. I'm like trying to figure out, but I don't discount it because I don't know. I forget her name, but if you remember that movie, I think 2 or 3 years ago, Netflix movie called The Power of the Dog.
Yeah.
Cumberbatch. So apparently I went to a talkback. I mean, I went to a screening with a talkback, and I think it was the director who, I think she had directed maybe one or two movies.
Jane Campion.
Yes. Yeah. Jane Campion. Right. I might be butchering here the information correctly, but I know that she did a short film. She did a short film. I think in, if I'm not wrong, she did that short film in order to show and to prove that she could direct that feature film. Oh, it went away. Oh.
He was right. He's gonna go away.
Oh, there. Oh, okay.
Look at that beautiful logo.
We're back. So she had done other, I don't think that was her very, very first feature film. And I think she is a cinematographer, but you know, so like even at that level, people are creating short films to prove that they can direct or whatever, you know. So I'm open to both, but I want to start to get my body really wet in feature films. It's not my feet; it's my body. I just want to be all in.
How many features have you done? Was it just the one?
Unicorn Diaries, I was part of two feature films in Brazil.
Okay.
One that, you know, opened the weekend of the pandemic, and it had opened in the entire country. So it was, you know, it was a big thing for me, but obviously
it's bad timing.
Bad timing. it was a comedy, actually. And then the other one is based on a true story of a jiu-jitsu fighter, Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter, named Fernando Tererê. And I don't think it came to the US, but it was on, or it is still on HBO Max, but Brazil or Latin America only. And that's an incredible movie. I actually played an American FBI agent, like an agent, because he comes to the US and he gets arrested here. And so those are the two feature films that I've been a part of in Brazil, and then Unicorn Diaries. And yeah, that's about it.
I did notice some Brazilian jiu-jitsu in a couple of these films. Would the one in the high rise where you choke out your friend from behind,
yeah,
and then he also chokes you out.
Yes.
And then Closure was the other one. There was quite a bit of jiu-jitsu in that, in the fight scene.
Closure is the one that I only directed, but that was specifically created to be like a fight thing.
And then you also had, what was it, an underwear ordeal, which is, again, fight choreography, comedy-based. But, I mean, you mentioned that you like action, or you grew up at least with action. So, interesting to see that stuff. are you drawn in a particular direction when it comes to the things that you're selecting to do? Because, I mean, watching what I watch, I was like, it's pretty much like there's some sort of supernatural stuff. There's comedy. There's drama. Like, there's a bunch of different stuff all across the spectrum. Like, is there one that you sort of gravitate towards more than others?
I think I probably should be like more specific in one lane. I feel that's maybe a little bit of a kryptonite for me because I like to vary, right? But again, as I mature and as I grow in my acting and my directing and my artistic life, I'm starting to decide a little more specifically. Again, I would love to be part of an action of anything. I can't say it because actually my have fallen through. I'll tell you a little bit later, but it was supposed to be an action, or it is an action movie that had somebody really well known that I don't know if it's going to be in the movie anymore. So I don't want to say it. But I auditioned for the lead because it doesn't play the lead. He is a star that I loved in the 90s growing up, you know? And so, I would love to, but it's not something I will audition for anything like it. And if the universe wants me to be part of it, I'll be a part of it. But in terms of like creating as a filmmaker, I'm not going to go that direction. I think my lane is just like beautiful, uplifting, true stories, you know? And if they're not true stories, that's fine too. You know, as long as like, I think it's going to be more relationship based. But also not like very slice of life. I am not particularly drawn. I respect it. And I've seen some that I'm actually like, whoa, I actually like this. One of my great friends, you know, she's a brilliant filmmaker, and her movie, I told her, look, this is not my style, but I honestly really like it. And I recently watched another one called Intrusive Thoughts that same a friend that I mentioned about the short films that Holly Shore's Coming to Terms, he produced that movie, and it's really good, and it's also not my style. It's just a little bit slow, and it's like the slice of life thing, and like I'm drawn to like Marty Supreme stuff, shit happening, boom, in 10 minutes something
drama,
happened,
high stakes,
yes, and shit turns around, you know. Or, you know, could be, there's slow moments too, obviously, but like one battle after another. I mean, I'm talking about big scale stuff, but I like stuff to happen, right? But I think it's going to be more like Roses Are Blind style. I would love to find stuff that is like wild relationship, like, but crazy and stuff, you know, turns. I also like thriller. I love thrillers. So I remember like Bone Collector, one of my...
I love The Bone Collector. I've been told it's a bad movie, but I'm like, I'm going to do it on Bad Movies We Love.
Oh my God, do it. Please, it's going to be...
Do it. You should do it. You should come on the show and do it.
I'll do that. I have to rewatch. It's been a long time, but I love that movie and suspense and thriller and stuff. So and also because like as a filmmaker too, we know that like the thriller / horror genre is just so big and easier to get in. So everybody's trying to target that. And now I'm now collabing with a friend of mine who, incredible writer, has this amazing script that I'm obsessed with. And hopefully we'll find the money to make it happen this year, next year. And I'll get to be a part of it. And it's in that vein, thriller, very like thriller with some, a little bit of horror, but you know, but that's something that is, cool. It's just... a really good director recently who actually edited my director's reel, which I have not posted yet, but I've been delaying. But I was like procrastinated for 2.5 years. I started doing it myself, and like then I found this. I knew about this incredible director, Samuel Gonzalez, and then I reached out to him. He's awesome. He teaches at UCLA. He's very talented. A lot of like genre, very like, you know, horror, gore stuff. And he's like, he tells me, look, you just like, I tell my students all the time, like, you just like, don't go direct to drama. Nobody's going to buy it. Like, and I get that. I'm still like, the one that I'm developing is so much more drama. Like, I'm okay. It's fine. Like, I don't, you know, I'll do it that way because I'm passionate about it. Right. Yeah. But if you like, and you have like inspiration to go into the thriller horror genre, oh my God, just do it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's more sort of like developmental stuff with horror and thriller because it is a more bankable genre in terms of getting stuff made. So I understand why you would want to lean that way to like get something fully produced and released. In watching and talking to a lot of indie filmmakers and seeing sort of like the stories they want to tell, I've seen personally, I mean, Chandler Levac, Toronto filmmaker, she told this story. I went to see, I saw her new movie, Mile End Kicks, like a couple days ago. And then she had I Like Movies, which was last year or the year before. Wow. But really, it was like a 2022 movie that was like, it took her 2 years to get it to come to L.A. So she like toured a couple cities in the States. And so she was here in Santa Monica and I went to see it. Mm. But like hearing her story about like how long it takes to actually like get that done, you know, it takes a while. So, I mean,
well, but she's had already three in like 4 years.
I think there's one more, but it was two at least that I know of.
Okay.
There might be another one.
That's amazing. She's doing fantastic.
Yeah. It's something that like is not readily available. So like even when it comes to like, oh, the movie is distributed in the States, like it's still a little bit difficult. But the one before it had some moderate success when it actually like finally released. But it was out in Canada for like 2 years.
Oh, wow.
So my friends in Canada are like, you guys still haven't gotten that yet? So it is interesting to see just regionally too how things work like that. But speaking of regions, you're Brazilian, mm-hmm. right? You said you had done some Brazilian films. When it comes to like your directing work or like the characters that you end up playing in some of these shorts, I mean, I think you, I don't know if you like ever directly like played somebody that identified as Brazilian. So like, does telling Brazilian stories, is that something that you like want to do going forward? Or do you want to be more of like a jack of all trades? Mm. I mean, I listening back to our interview and you were talking about doing the voice testing for Roberto in X-Men and sort of changing your inflection and sort of losing some of the accent to mm-hmm. do that. So like, where does that fall into sort of like your creative endeavors at this point?
Yeah, you know, funny enough, part of also like that, you know, growing and maturing, and it's like I had heard it for so many years through my, you know, my studies and my training and you know, with the Latin thing always being obviously it's part of who I am, but I think, you know, early on I leaned so much into, because I knew the accent was an important thing, and so not because of culture, like I'm very patriotic, I love my country, I love being Latin, it's not about that, it's just that I knew when I decided that I want to be an actor and I wanted this to be my life, that if I had a thick accent, it's going to be an impediment, right? Even at the time, which is like 2010, you know, there was already having openings for, you know, Latin people or like minorities, right? And it continues to have. Obviously, we all want more.
Yeah.
But we can't deny that since 2010 to right now, 15 years later, like there's been so much opening, which is amazing. But I knew that if I am able to neutralize my accent and be able to put on an accent, I would have more opportunities. And so I focused on it so much and continue to, you know, it's funny because even now, yeah, I mean, I know I have like for really trained ear, depending of you can notice, you can hear stuff, but oftentimes I get from so many people, oh, wow, I couldn't tell. Like if they don't know anything about me, they're like, oh, and I always say, oh, maybe I'm from Florida. You know, it's like a mixture of things.
You lived in Florida. Or, so
you know,
counts,
like,
right?
So, but I, you know, I'm obviously not like the all American guy, but now like, as I, you know, just mature and keep coming back to my roots a little more. And also just with, coincidentally, the great success that Brazil has had in the United States the last 2 years with the last two movies in the Oscars.
Yeah.
It's like I see more, I mean, there's much more roles in like with Brazilian Portuguese that I'm like, even like voice stuff. There's, you know, Man on Fire on Netflix just came out. I did looping for that because it was shot in Brazil. Like there's been so much more Brazilian presence, right? And so I'm like, yeah, maybe I should like do something that I'm like Brazilian or something and get into, you know, so I am thinking more about that. But just in general, it's been like because, as you know, but maybe the listeners didn't know, like my mom is Argentinian. My father was Peruvian. I lived a bit in Venezuela. So I have a lot of Latin culture. And when I moved to Miami and I focused on acting, I had to change my accent in Spanish as well. So it could sound more neutral and what the TV required. So I could work in the novelas, soap operas, and the TV shows, and that's where I got my start. So everything for me is always like adapting. I have to adapt because I wanna have the jobs, you know? And so I knew there was gonna be so much more roles for Spanish speaking, Latin, you know, people. So I always lean more into that in my Latinidad, as we say, you know what I'm saying? But now again, as Brazil is becoming more, I'm like, yeah, maybe I got to think more about that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, getting like representation at the Oscars, of course, is big. And I think both of those stories too, if correct me if I'm wrong, but I think if memory serves, both of those stories are like specifically about like what's happening in Brazil. It's not just like, hey, this is a Brazilian filmmaker. It's like shot and filmed with actors in Brazil. Like this is historical stories Brazil as well. And I think that's also a big part of
the
success and the importance like of those films is like, you're not just seeing these characters that are speaking in a language where, you know, most people are like, I don't want to read subtitles. Well, maybe not most people, but a lot of people.
Yes.
So you're not just seeing a foreign language film, like you're getting a piece of that country's history along with it. And, you know, I guess my question was sort of like, did you feel pressure to like be more white, like in trying to work?
Well, in terms of the accent, yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, funny enough, I'm like, I feel like I'm such, you know, even what I was telling you earlier, like, I think it'd be more beneficial for me to really like hone in in one thing as a filmmaker or any, like just be very specific about like the niche of one thing that I do. But I don't know. It's just part of me to want to like always like have this expansive thing. And so what is tricky about me is that I am on the whiter side in skin color, right? So I'm more white than I am Latin, I feel, for casting when they see a photo of me. Yeah. Especially lately since I've been in the States, because I don't, you know, get as much sun as I used to when I was in Brazil playing tennis as a kid all the time, though I've always had a hat, but I was, you know, I had more color. But so like, you know, I'm already like coming off more, if you just see my photo, as an European, whatever, you know, that is whiter than it is Latin, right? And so... But the pressure to be white in that way, it was just I don't see it that way. It was just like the accent, which to me makes sense. I mean, I want to work in this country in this language and have more opportunities. So I want to be able to truthfully be received as an American. And then if I want to change and I want to have these skills, then I want to have, you know what I'm saying, which is accent, I'm not the greatest at, but I've at least now have a couple in my pocket, you know, but some people are so talented with like doing so many different accents and changing, you know?
I mean, you're very multicultural as well. I mean, even within the States, you've lived in like 3 or 4 different states at this point.
Yes.
So, and regionally very different too, like Miami to New York, California.
Yeah.
So like really, I think checking a lot of boxes there. I mean, I'm surprised you're even in town to do this interview. Every time I see you, you're traveling somewhere to do like Comic-Con or working or something. I want to ask a little bit about sort of timeline trajectory, because a lot of the stuff that I watched in preparation for this interview is pre-X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
See, we got to X-Men, I told you. Mm-hmm. So a little bit pre-X-Men, and then now there's been a couple of years, it's been 2 years since the show finished airing, actually. I think the end of the show aired like... 2 years ago, next week, something like that.
Great to know, because I made a post about, I think it was episode 4, when it was 4 years of episode 1.
Yeah.
I always like to do that, like 2 year anniversary.
Yeah,
and then I did, I did episode 5 because it's so monumental, but also because I didn't realize that one of my favorite lines in the show that is said by our great Leonard Zan, who voices Rogue, is in that episode, and I forgot that I was actually in the episode. Mm. I mean, I knew that was part of that scene, but I didn't know that that scene actually happened in episode 5, where she looks at Roberto and says, hey, Romeo, the odds may be bad, but the cards are always in the X-Men favor. And it's my favorite line of the entire show. So anyway, so good reminder, because now next week I'm going to do another post, because that's a big moment for Roberto, if you remember.
Yeah. I think the 15th is that, the end of the show?
There you go.
Maybe. Perfect. I don't know. I'll look it up.
I think
that's what you said in the other episode that we did. But I'm curious, like, what's changed for you in terms of how you, like, approach doing the directing work? Because now, like, you do a lot of the cons, so you travel a lot, right? You had to be back in studio recording again for X-Men. You've gotten more work that I've been to the premiere for one of these movies. So how has your like relationship to directing changed sort of post X-Men?
Well, so it's changed not necessarily because of X-Men, but just circumstances of the industry and life. So for, you know, filmmakers and people who know a little bit about the industry, in 2023, we had a big strike, the actor strike, and we came back literally, I think, January 2024, which is when I shot West Texas Home, which would be my last short film, right, that I haven't premiered yet, because I've been submitting to these bigger festivals since last quarter of last year. But that was the last thing that I directed. It was January 2024. And then I booked Elsbeth that same month, and I shot it in February, I think. The last thing also on camera at that level that I did. It was all like beginning of 2024. Then March, X-Men comes out. You know, the industry was recovering. You know, I didn't have a lot of auditions. I was working, like, my reps were not, or one of my manager at the time was not, you know, I guess the industry, but not the greatest. I wasn't very happy. So I didn't get a lot of opportunities. But also because of the strike, though, yes, I traveled a lot and all of this, but I had to go back and teach tennis again more than I had before. So 2024, yes, I did a lot of cons. Then last year, it just, economy, you know, our
lovely economy.
Yes, let's not get political, but the, you know,
read between the lines.
Yes, the man, and I don't know if we can call him a man, but that thing that we have in power, and, you know, it affected, you know, the whole industry and stuff like that. And so last year, even more, I was like teaching so much tennis. And so then doing as much as I could of the cons, the opportunities that I had, and obviously always auditioning, but I didn't have the energy. And also, like, my shorts take so long. It's crazy. It takes almost as long as feature films, really. And I think it's just because, you know, there's so many favors being asked, and people, you know, we take time, we procrastinate, and it's okay, you know, because we're never in a rush. I shot it, you know, January 2024. I mean, we didn't really get close to finishing a year later, right? And so I didn't have time or energy for anything else. And now, like, okay, this is done. Let's start thinking about the film festival stuff. And then I was just so, you know, busy and energetically drained by having to teach and having to do all these other things, I didn't do anything creatively that way. I wasn't, you know, and that's why I was like fortunate enough that a few other things that I can't really talk about right now, happened, which is amazing, you know, in the voice world, also some other things not related to the entertainment industry. But I had committed, I was like, I don't know, since like July or something like that, I was like, I'm a big believer in law of attraction, visualizing, believing, all this kind of things. And so I did so much internal work, and I'm like, I don't care. I don't know how, but next year I am back to like directing. I'm back to my, cause I had never, since I started 2013, my very first short, I think it's been the longest hiatus of like 2 years of not creating something of my own. And I wasn't in an acting class and anything like, and I wasn't like acting. Yeah, the voice stuff, but it's also sporadic. So I'm like, I gotta be back to my artistic actor self, number one, because I'm first and foremost an actor, and then into my creative stuff with directing. And so I'm back in that path. I have great friends too that were like, so many ideas. I might hopefully be able to shoot something at the end of this month, beginning of June, and just start creating little things, you know, because it's so creative for me. It helps my acting. And, you know, I need new material. So if I'm not getting booked and getting new stuff, like, I need to create my own stuff, yeah, you know?
No, that makes sense.
So that is kind of the reason I missed it so much. I was like, I don't know what I need to do, but it needs to change, because I can't go another year without, like, not feeling I'm immersed in the life that I love and that I want to be, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, things are changing.
Well, good. I'm glad things are trending upwards again. I think there was just a recent either like city bill passed or California state legislature bill passed that helped to keep filming in LA. So yes. I know that is yes. a big deal too. So
yes,
it's been a big thing for the last like year and a half of people, yeah. you know, trying to fight to keep, to you keep know, film here. Jobs here. How much are you at liberty to actually tell us about X-Men? You can tease it. I mean, I don't know how tight your NDA is.
It's very
I'm sure it is.
I can't.
It's going to be good.
Right? Well, so here's the thing. Well, I hope it's good for, I mean, the judges are you guys, you know, the audience. So I truly, truly hope that people respond, you know, as positively as they did season one. And I get it. Like, we all for like, how it's so hard for any movie sequel, any show to like go above.
The bar is high.
Yeah. It's super high. So it's okay. I'm not expecting it to be, oh my God, this is even better. But as long as like, oh my God, this was good. This was entertaining. This was like, oh, you know, it hits people, you know, in a deep way as the first season did. I am more than happy, you know, but I honestly, I can't answer that for real because yeah. we don't get to see everything.
Yeah,
you know,
that's fair. That's
our
fair.
Characters are not in every episode. In fact, like we watched the first season when they did the premiere fan event.
You get your lines separately from everybody else.
So that was the first time we had seen all of us, like everything, like all the episodes. And I think they screened at that time 3. We don't know if we're going to get another like premiere event like that yet. We don't know, honestly.
I hope so.
I hope so too. And yeah, so.
Did you feel fulfilled returning to Roberto?
Yes. Oh my God.
There you go.
No, for sure. For sure. I mean, the thing is like people did, I mean, I can't remember when exactly they announced that, but like because I came in, I think it was the last one to come in for season one. It was 2022. Or one of the last ones. And I think it was still 2022 or maybe 2023. I already knew that season two was happening and we already started working on it. So it was kind of like, you know, together. And so, I was obviously very happy. You know, I want to be in how many, you know, hopefully we get 10 seasons, hopefully we get at least 5 seasons, but hopefully 10. And I want to be in all of them, but who knows, you know?
Well, I appreciate your time, man. It's always a pleasure talking to you. So
I'm
glad that we got to do this and we got to do it in person because I feel like this is a sort of more holistic way to do the interviews.
Yes.
But yeah, I appreciate you, man.
Dude.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nick. This was amazing. Thank you for having me.
Do me one favor.
Yeah.
Look at the camera. Say, yeah. This is Guy Agostini and you're watching Bad Movies We Love.
Oh, that's it. All right, guys, this is Guy Agostini, and you're watching Bad Moves You Love, or We Love. We Love. I'll say it again. All right. This is Guy Agostini, and you're watching Bad Movies. Oh, I can't even say it now. See? All right, here we go. Take 3. Guys, this is Guy Agostini, and you're watching Bad Movies We Love.
Thanks for joining us for this spotlight session right here on Bad Movies We Love. If you enjoyed the conversation, be sure to follow the show, leave us a review, and share it with your fellow movie lovers. Thanks again to Guy for hanging out and chatting with me about his career both behind and in front of the camera and what the trajectory looks like for him. Plus, he made the journey to come and see me in person to do the interview, so that is greatly appreciated. You can find him on Instagram at GuyAgostini1. And you can check out a lot of his short film work on his YouTube account, also at Guy Agostini. And don't forget to check out season 2 of X-Men 97, debuting July 1st. Links for that will be up in the show notes. And while you're there, make sure you check out the rest of the Scheist Podcast Network at scheistpodnet.captivate.fm. And until next time, stay curious and take care.